Welcome to the Adversity Psychologist podcast, a podcast incorporating narratives about facing and navigating adversity, a mixture of people, their experiences, and professional psychological discussion. I'm Dr. Tara Quinn-Tirillo. I'm a qualified and regulated psychologist with over 20 years' experience of mental health, disability, and human behaviour. I want to share people's stories of navigating adversity in the hope that through being heard, a dose of compassion and some understanding, we can help others in the face of adversity too.
Hi, and welcome to the Adversity Psychologist podcast. Oh, super exciting guest. It's Friday. I have someone yet again that I have met before and thought, I need more of this, invited them on. So I have Crystal McGilvery with me. Would you like to introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are and what's brought you on today.
Yes, absolutely. First of all, thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here. We've been trying to get in the dark for a minute. I am a money and behavioral specialist. So in a nutshell, that's all about the psychology behind your decision making, specifically money. And I'm also a chartered accountant and have been working in the space of finance for 20 years now, which is great. My area is around money confidence, work-related things, helping you feel less stressed, less overwhelmed, supporting mainly first-generation wealth builders, so people who don't come from money, and, of course, us wonderful neurodiverse individuals, helping us, you know, overcome the challenges that we may experience when it comes to money. Outside of that, I'm a speaker. And I love delivering training, masterclasses, etc. I love improv, I love acting, painting, and I've been able to work with some really nice organisations, you know, whether it's The Guardian, Moonpig, Equifax, been on ITV. That's me in a nutshell, I think.
You do loads. So we just hit it off when we met. We met, didn't we, on, we will say it, on the Pension Bee podcast.
Yeah.
Talking about ADHD, particularly in the context of money. It was a really great discussion, but we needed more. Me going, right, we need to talk more about this, because I know that struck a chord with so many people, because there can be a lot of, I'm going to say, kind of more distinct issues for people who are neurodivergent. And there can be a lot of shame. So people don't talk about it. So I thought, right, let's build those two things together. Who better to have on? Because you also, I will say for people, because we've met before, you have a really good way of delivering information in a way that makes people go, ah, I get that. So, you know, the most important thing is that we want deliverance of really good quality information on this podcast, so we can help break down barriers and things that people might be silently struggling with. And I think ADHD and money and shame is something we don't talk about enough. So I'm so thrilled. I know how busy you are. So I'm always so super grateful that people are able to kind of make some time to come on. It's the end of the week, so this is the perfect thing for me to end the week on. Let's dive straight in then. What is it? We can use the word neurodivergent, but particularly ADHD is a thing that interests me in terms of research around money, how the brain works. What got you interested in it? I'm going to start with that question first. Why think a little bit more about ADHD, particular or neurodivergence, and money habits?
Yeah, good question. Absolutely. So my background, I'm a chartered accountant, right? So I worked in finance and, you know, prod along, do what I'm doing, you know, very structured, very organized. I know I need to be, otherwise I will fail everywhere. And actually, so I did that, you know, worked in the space for many years, and then I took myself back to uni to do a master's. And I did that about 4 years ago, maybe 5 years ago now. And that was the master's in behavioral economic science, which is this area that I now really double down on. And during my master's is where I was diagnosed with dyslexia, actually, and ADHD as well. But initially dyslexia, because of the struggles I was having in sessions. And I'd been doing this finance stuff, kind of personal finance and working with people one-on-one for a few years. And like, I'm quite chatty on social. So I shared on social, hey, by the way, I've just got diagnosed with this. And this is before I was really in, you know, the world of neurodiversity.
Yes.
But I shared it publicly, and that post, I think 30,000 impressions.
Wow.
A load of direct messages. And then my client saying, yeah, me too. And basically I kind of went off and really thought about that, because I think I realized about 70% of my clients, what I was working with one-on-one, were, and I was like, something clicked. Yes. And I really started to pay attention to the way that I spoke about money and compared myself to the way that the world of money, you know, is delivered to us as humans. Yeah. And I've always just really hated it. And even now I see some people in the finance space who are really influential, and the way they talk to you about money, I'm like, listen, I'll fight you. Stop talking to people like this.
So what do you notice? Is that right to us? What is it about the way they talk that doesn't sit so well? If it's something you can kind of summarize.
Absolutely. Even what we're kind of going to focus on here around the shame, you know, people are like, they're really making people feel stupid for making whatever decisions they're making that are not aligned with the bigger vision, you know, the deciding to buy the cake or whatever it is you do in the now for the reasons we understand. These financial professionals are shaming people. And I think that's the crux of where I'm tapping into a group of humans who are human, right?
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, so basically seeing that natural connection, I'm neurodivergent, most of my clientele are neurodivergent, people resonate, even if they're not my clientele, they resonate with how I talk about this stuff online, at events, and I care, and I have so much fire in me to be that voice to say, stop it, that's where it started.
Because where does shame, you know, if we're struggling maybe to talk about money anyway, in British culture, I will say this, we don't really talk about money. We're kind of brought up, we don't really talk about our house value or, people are getting a bit better. But then you add that layer of, if you are struggling or you feel we compare, don't we? We're social beings. So herd instinct, this is what everyone else is doing and I should be. That's lots of layers. And if you're then shamed for the decisions you make and how you make them, what does that mean for people then getting support if they are struggling?
Well, then they don't. And there's another behavioral economist, I think her name's Sarah. She also studied, I think she studied at the same uni. Oh, no, she's American. Americans are obviously faster to adapt to some of this stuff. But she wrote a great paper talking about the spiral of shame. You know, you feel the shame because of the, you know, you feel rejection, whatever, and you then avoid your finances. And because you avoid your finances, you then, it just continues.
Absolutely.
Spiral is the word she used a lot on that. But that's exactly what happens. And it's not helping anyone.
That kind of, when we know, when we just think of human behavior in general, that's why I like talking to you, because it's the behavioral understanding, the behavioral element that I think is so important for people as well. Yeah. It's not just about money and decisions. It's understanding, I guess it's the formulation behind it, isn't it? That as human beings, when things are tricky, we will naturally want to avoid emotionally or practically or all of those things. But it's understanding then the outcome of that what it can mean is, if you are someone who struggles a little bit more with money due to the way that you're kind of brain is wired, and also other life issues, people who aren't neurodivergent, you just said there, also this stuff resonates with them, because sometimes there are things going on for us which mean we are more impulsive, or we aren't so considered, or we've been brought up in a way we didn't know we have to plan. You know, there's so many things, is that then can loop, but it can speed up. The thing about money as well is, if you do avoid certain areas, there's huge risks. So that spiraling isn't just avoidance. It's, to me, there's something about pace.
Yeah.
You know, and the kind of risk issues that come with that for people who are ignoring or letting things build up.
Yeah. And it's, you know, just what you said at the top of this section here, it's not just about knowing what a savings account or an ISA is, or what it means to invest. Yeah. That's all great. A lot of, you know, whether you're neurodivergent or not, there are lots of intelligent humans who know the stuff, but it's not about that. It's about how do you make it happen? How do you do this thing?
Absolutely.
What needs to be addressed underneath the surface? And in the world of finance at the moment, predominantly, it's not about that. It's just purely education, kind of hammering home, do this. If you haven't done it, what's your problem?
Yes. And we're in this kind of, I would say, this kind of world at the moment, very lots of little sound bites. So a lot of it can be very, do this, do that. You haven't done this, you haven't done that. Yeah. It's kind of clickbaity stuff as well, isn't it? And that can add to shame. So if you're kind of someone who's on your phone going, oh, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, or I should be doing that, it can make you more secretive over your money. And I guess one thing I want to bring in today is that, you know, there may be someone who's just thinking individually about themselves, but some people are part of a family unit or somewhere where their money habits or the issues they're struggling with and the shame they're holding can also impact others, and vice versa. And hopefully what I want to get out of this episode is people just beginning to be okay with talking about it, and to know shame is a thing.
Yeah, it's, I really like that you mentioned that, actually. Yes, for sure. Whether I work with parents, and they are so like, and some are so embarrassed by their struggles, or embarrassed by the fact that they haven't got it right by now. And, you know, what I try to get them to think about instead, so a bit of a reframe, okay, fine, you could have chosen to continue on that path, but you haven't. Right now, you are exploring, taking action. You've changed it already. And it's realizing, you know, thinking more around growth mindset and the fact that you've started, you're now on a different path. That's it instantly. And you're doing so much better for your family as a result. Just that reframe, because no one's perfect.
And it's so simple, isn't it? It's just letting people be humans. And what is wonderful about all of us, why I run this podcast, why I do the job that I do, we're all so different, and we need to celebrate each other and those differences rather than kind of shame. And the difficult thing about money is historically, you know, people are very much still very judged on money and what they do as decisions. You know, sometimes we have massive cognitive biases over, you know, what people drive, what they live in. So money is quite a dominant thing, which is why I really wanted to talk about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, and I've written up loads of notes and a bit of a paper, which I wish I'd read before this, actually. But looking at the history of money, you know, what it, the role of money in society, the role of money in our financial system today, and the things that still exist that we'd like to think don't exist, but they do. They're still baked into the financial systems, the banking system, the financial advisors. You know, so then when we bring in ADHD, it's on top of all that that already exists. So yes, there's the internal factors and the way our beautiful brains are wired, but of course there are external systemic factors that make that so much harder.
And I think, again, so as a psychologist, we love to educate people to kind of understand and be compassionate about the formulation. So it's the picture that might be behind certain behaviours or repeated behaviours. So one of the things that we were discussing on the podcast we're on together is that sometimes people will notice patterns in their behaviour, repeated things that might go wrong or things that might work well, but they might not talk about that. And one of the things I kind of wanted to go on to next then is, what is it particularly about ADHD or neurodivergent people that might present as more barriers in terms of relationship with money, habits around money?
I mean, so this is the thing that I see most common and I understand to be the biggest. Yeah, I think it's the organization side of money.
Yeah.
Which, you know, where I am all about systems and automations really addresses that, right?
Yes, yeah.
But you know, remembering things and keeping structure, and that for a lot of us is such a challenge.
Absolutely.
You know, if it, even if it's not about money, if I don't have these things in place, whether it's, you know, body doubling or things, you know, so much will fall apart. But, you know, and kind of just on a little tangent here, but that's kind of a really big change for people when they realize that actually there's no shame in getting support in those areas. As long we just want the end result. We want the result to be. However you get there, do whatever. So that, and like you already mentioned, definitely the shame as well creates a problem. I can't not talk about impulsivity. Around, you know, emotional highs and lows. And I think, and that's both, right? That's whether you're really excited and you want to treat yourself, or I share personally, I used to work in Oxford Street around the back in like the advertising agencies. And at the end of a Friday, it was one particular company I really didn't enjoy. And every Friday I'd go out for a shop down Oxford Street to feel better. But just back to what you're saying about patterns, that was a really straightforward pattern that I had every Friday. But that helped me be okay. And it's, you know, linked to how I feel.
And I guess when you notice, if you're right to ask, so noticing, because that's quite a good everyday example, right? When I feel this, look at this routine, I'll go and do that. So, you know, people might be listening and go, well, it's okay, you can choose to go shopping, you're an autonomous adult. Was there anything that you noticed about that pattern that made you think, ah, this isn't just about me needing stuff and enjoying a process of shopping? Was there anything that was more problematic about that pattern in terms of money, finance?
I was in the impact.
Yes, yeah.
Well, of course, yeah. The impact is, you know, and this is common with the clientele. It's you have plans to save for X and you're instead spending that money. So yeah, you can see the consequence of that behavior immediately.
So they're in that decision between like informed choice. I want to go and buy this, I've got this event coming up, so I'm going to go buy this thing and I'm feeling a bit mess, so that will cheer me up, versus I'm just buying to deal with an emotional need, throw in some impulsivity as well. Actually, what it's meaning is I'm now not able to do that thing, or maybe more at risk because I haven't got enough money in the bank for everyday things. It's kind of looking at this, the formulation around it, isn't it?
Yeah, and I find that useful, but it doesn't change anything for a lot of people. And that's where, you know, that's where I give space and grace for, okay, that's the reality. Okay, that's where we are right now. And personally, of course, I'm not a psychologist, right, or a therapist. So, you know, exploring the depths of that, I'd encourage them to speak to somebody. But on the more practical side, maybe, all right, when we do our budget, let's put some money aside for impulsivity. Absolutely.
That's what I like. Yes. Because that, to me, moves around away from the kind of shame that we should not be doing this, stop doing it, which we know if you've got, you know, issues with the front part of your brain, impulsivity, it's not as easy to just go, well, let's just not do it. And actually, it's more shaming, isn't it? So that's the stuff I really like. You know, how the best way to deal with shame is, there's the noticing and naming to know what it is, because some people don't know what shame is when it's showing up. But it's those actionable things as well, because also... it's normalizing that lots of people need these actions. Yeah.
This is it. And I think for a lot of people who've never done this work with, say, a finance coach or whatever, they've never had someone hold the space to and accept both sides of them that seem to be at conflict. Yeah. And then actually, because maybe in that moment, it can't be fixed as such, it's okay. How do we find a way to still be okay and thrive with those two realities? And that's where, you know, these other solutions come into play.
That's what I really like then. That really struck me when we met, because you were talking about this on the other podcast as well, that, you know, being accepting of some of the things that you do. So it's not about reducing, stopping in a shame way. It's just about, right, there might be some issues that come from this spending behavior, from these habits, but it's likely that that's going to continue due to the way I am, right? And that, I think that actually that self-compassion, that's what I'm hoping people listening to this will kind of go, because the minute you can drop the shame, I think that actually does put you kind of cognitively in a better space to go, right, what can we do with this? But I like those, that kind of parallel, that this may continue, how do we offset?
I think it gives back control, because in the moment, you know, when you're looking back at the fact, oh, I've spent this, I've spent that, I've dipped into my savings, you don't feel like you're in control. You feel like you're at the mercy of, you know, I'm depressed, or I've had a bad week, or I've had a bad month, whatever that negative emotion is that maybe gets you there, if I just focus on that side.
Yes.
Then you don't feel in control, but actually you really can gain control of accepting awareness, like you're saying, and then, okay, this slight little tweak I can make over here. And often it's the smallest thing, but has such a big impact, because it impacts your money, but also how you feel, which then impacts your money positively as well.
Yes, it's not always focusing on the kind of doom and gloom, you know, because I know when I went to school and people didn't really have conversations about everyday money, but it was still quite kind of shamey, you know, and kind of these expectations of what you would do and you have savings. And sometimes we could then have these conversations that we may go, well, I don't have that compared to other people, so therefore I can't speak out and say I don't, because people are going to think this about me. So how do we start? Somebody who may be listening, sat on the train now going, this is me, but it might be hard to reach out. Where can people go as a first port of call to start to talk about actionable points?
Where can they go to start talking about actionable points?
So there's people like yourself, for example, that they can come and find. Are there kind of play? How do people find people like you, I guess, if this is brand new territory for them?
Yeah, okay, yeah. In the world, like what we just said, the world of finance, content, educators, coaches can be a little bit overwhelming, right? Especially where
that's what I'm thinking.
Some are saying different things. Do you know what I encourage people to do? And I'm surprised that a lot of people don't know this, but say I've worked with a therapist for 8 years, right? And I remember when I was looking for her, and when I've gone on to look for another, you know, a different type, I interview my potential psychologist or therapist. I want to make sure we have a good fit. I want to make sure I feel safe and comfortable and all the good things.
Yeah,
I'd encourage the exact same approach here. There's if you do, you know, if we're talking about working with somebody, there's a massive suite of people with all types of qualifications and experience. interview people, listen to their staff, get a feel of who they are before you commit to anything. And, you know, even around asking the silly question, if they shame you in that or show annoyance or absolutely yes. Well, goodbye. You know,
it's so obvious, but we wouldn't necessarily think that, because I still think there's a bit of a control agenda of, well, I'm going to see this expert in finance or whatever it is, and we're not great at asking or questioning, are we? And knowing that we are the one that can choose who's
we have the power. And because I think especially around the world of, you know, in the world of finance, and I say this from working with ADHDers, etc., there can be a bit of a fear around the financial institutions or anybody who's a professional in the finance space, whether they're the bank teller, whether they're the person at the credit union, whether they're the financial, this is a bit scary, right? And you, especially when you maybe don't understand the way the system works and you fear I'm going to be found out or I'm going to get in trouble, it can be quite scary. And I guess my encouragement here is they're just humans at the end of the day, you know, they're people. And if somebody is not able to show you empathy and kindness and patience, then they're a no. And that says more about them as a person than the world of finance and money.
I love the fact you brought in patience as well, because I'm just thinking, if you've got a neurodivergent brain who's, you know, being able to start to look at the shame and going, I need to talk to someone about this and meet, but then you're met with someone that's the lingo, as you say, and the pace isn't right, it might make you pull back again. And I guess that's what I love about the conversations and the work. I will say to people, we'll put all your, where you hang out on the show notes as well, is just to get a sense of maybe what you need to kind of listen to you on podcasts and a lot of the media and social media that you do, because I think it's really refreshing, you know, just honest, frank conversations and genuinely non-shaming.
I just think it's so important, because maybe, you know, I am, you know, hyper vigilant or hyper aware, but I'm so sensitive to somebody feeling in a negative way, especially around money, because I can so clearly see the shutdown. That stops any kind of growth, learning, development. So it's like, you've done this, you've not done the work you were going to do, all right, fine, you know, tuck to you, let's keep it moving. But you know, if people do listen to me, absolutely, but I say, you know, I might not be the perfect person for you, you know, there are, you know, especially if actually you do need tax specific, you know, inheritance related things, as well as maybe it's a hybrid, or maybe actually they're the person for you, and it's taking the time to listen to what these people offer.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What I've noticed we've done so far is actually help people to maybe slow down the slightly faster thinking that's usually more prevalent in people with ADHD particularly. So sometimes, you know, if you're noticing that shame and guilt, and with any human emotion, when it's very strong, sometimes what we can do is get kind of stuck in quick fix mode. Right, I've got to find someone, deal with this, get it done, and then I don't have to think about it, because it's emotional avoidance, kind of fear, panic, and trying to normalize that. But actually, people need the space to go, right, what is it that's showing up? What are my habits? Who do I need to speak to, and how am I going to find the right person? So we're just kind of naturally, I like the way we did that quite organically, starting to break it down into steps. So people might be thinking, right, what are some of the kind of practical things that you may work with someone on? Because someone might go, well, what does that look like? I want to sit down with someone, because there still may be that kind of bias of they're just going to go, right, move this here, do that there, pay off that or whatever. Is how, you know, how do we approach this? What's a nice, compassionate way?
Yeah, and it's funny, I was about to say, you know, people seeking support or wanting to do some work around their money, people are going to be in different places. Some people are going to be in a place of, I need to just do some quick fixes right now, otherwise I'll lose my house. Or, you know,
good point,
You know, whatever the extra, that's an extreme example, but some firefighting initially. Yeah.
And in the current climate, I think that's really important to say that there are some people in this cost of living really struggling who are literally one or two mortgage payments away from losing their house or losing their home rent arrears, whatever.
And, you know, and that might mean the focus right now is just being really smart, efficient, creative, just knocking some things out. And then maybe afterwards, it's kind of what we've just kind of spoken through. It's okay. What am I doing? Why am I doing that? what is it I want? And I guess a really practical example I could share, just around how to think through that.
Yeah.
A question that some struggle with, but I always put it forward because I think it's important. It's kind of thinking, what is it you would like things to look like? Where is it you want to be? And comparing that to where you are right now. So, for example, I'd like to buy a home, and that requires me to save X amount or whatever every month. Right now, every month I dip into my savings, so I'm not doing that. That's a clear, you know, challenge. And then the space for growth is, okay, well, why are we not there? What are we doing instead that's stopping us from getting there? So whether it's ignoring the bank balance, or one person I worked with, we got to the point that every Friday he'd go out for drinks, and he thought that buying the round of drinks is how he showed he was a good friend. So he thought
he was
in a good place. So it came from a good place, and he'd dip into his savings, and obviously his partner wasn't very happy about that. So just kind of explored creative other ways. How else could you be a good friend without spending, you know, what is your savings? And it's just kind of noticing what's the blockages, because we call them frictions, right? What are the frictions stopping
frictions.
You? Yeah, I really love that word.
I like that, yeah.
We use a lot of behavioral economics, right? What are those frictions? We use them in both ways. One, what are the frictions that are stopping you from doing the good behavior? But then when we're looking at solution-focused work, what frictions can we put in place to stop you from doing the bad behavior?
Yes.
That might be a bank account with a lock on it that requires you to give some time notice before you can access the money.
That I love well, yes. Those other little physical, practical barriers.
Absolutely, which is more around the quick fix stuff, because it's not the slower thinking. It's actually, what can we do right now?
What I really love is, because the thing about your work, it's bringing in the kind of behavioral, the therapeutic element. It's helping people understand that, right? Because I'm thinking, if you went to just see a financial advisor, would they start going, right, Friday night, do it? Would be that's, I think, where inadvertently more of the shaming stuff. Well, you've got to stop doing that because it makes sense, right? The drinks, because that's where your money's going. But how easy is it to do that, and having someone to compassionately point that out and work with it?
You're spot on, because the financial advisor is purely there to be practical and get the money fixed in the way that, yes, you want, but the reality is some of that it requires a bit more thinking or requires a different approach, and they may not be focused on that.
And I'm guessing, obviously that's an individual case, but as a psychologist, I would have thought that actually that will create more of a core shift, because you're understanding the behaviour and the patterns and in the position to change it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because if we don't have insight into what we're doing and why we're doing something, we are less likely to create that longer term change.
Yeah. This temporary change would be a temporary change. It would be it's a bit that comparison you just made me think about nudges compared to what I remember I learned about during my master's, boosters, which is kind of more the coaching, more the exploring, more of the desired thing, you know, all that stuff.
Yes.
So artificially changing something. The immediate effect, but it's not real.
Yeah, that's what I really like. So when we think about, the reason we kind of talked about neurodivergence is there are some more prominent, we know from research, issues around money compared to kind of general population. And although actually a lot of these things, you know, will resonate with many people who aren't ADHD as well, is those kind of practical. So some people might say, right, I have an understanding, but the impulsivity, the kind of way my brain is, I keep still doing some of these habits. And one of the things I loved when we met before, and you've alluded to a couple already, is that there's some practical things people can think about, things that create a barrier between them accessing their money, or automations and something as well you kind of talk about.
Yeah, there's so many. And you know, in terms of how to think about it for yourself, it's kind of first getting clear on that gap that I just spotted, we just defined. It does require you to sit down and reflect, right?
Yeah.
What am I doing throughout the week? Like, what's the actual thing that's stopping me from doing what I really want to do? And if it's the going out and drinking and spending, maybe remove the apps from your phone and only bring a certain amount of cash, because some places do take out.
I think that's made a difference to people. It's very Monopoly money, ping, ping, ping on a phone. Yeah. Sometimes I don't think we even register it's actually money, which probably sounds bizarre, but it's changed our thinking.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, two things. One, I've had several of my clients say, I just can't grasp money.
Yes. Yeah.
It's quite a distressing thought, but they're like, I just don't get it. Yes. And actually, and I spoke about this actually when I was on TV, but yeah, they, you know, we actually prefer using card because it's when we use cash, this is research that was carried out, we feel pain in our brain in the same way that if we were cut when we use cash. So yes. Of course we love using cards and apps because it's not real.
So there's more of a kind of a detachment then. That's so interesting. Yeah.
So if you bring, you know, if you are spending too much, delete the apps, get the cash and make it a bit harder, because I guess that's a pattern break then, isn't it? Because instead of you in the excitement, go, yep, here, tap, because you've got to use cash, it feels uncomfortable, it's clunky, it's actually painful.
It's present moment awareness. That just came for me. Going like this, and I think when I was little, you'd have cash registers, you'd have little plastic coins and notes. I'm that old, but actually, it was quite good. You know, you'd get money from your grandma or whatever, and you knew you had this blue £5 note, and therefore you'd have these yellow coins. And then when you get to the silver ones, you've got to be a bit more careful. There's not enough money for sweets left then, but it helped. Do you know what? Visually, some people need to pull to mind visual concepts, and when you've got kind of Monopoly money just pinging here and there, and checking your app every now and again of what's in your bank, I don't think for some people that's a helpful way.
It's not. And the way I think about this stuff, because some of these short-term solutions might not last forever, but then you're leaning towards building new habits, new ways of thinking.
Yes. Glad you brought that in. Yeah.
Yeah, you can start thinking about new neural pathways that are being created because actually you're doing something different over and over again, and all of a sudden this is normal for you.
And good for you as well, because we know that from research, when you're learning new things, it's also better for more neuroplasticity, more kind of learning new things in the longer term. So what I love is that kind of hybrid approach. It's the being able to recognize the problem and reducing the shame, being able to then take that next step when you're ready. I'm going to throw in as well that it's not a have to do this the next day book to see someone. It's taking the time to go, right, I need to talk to someone. Who could that be? What's the fit? Yeah. Understanding the formulation that there's shorter term and longer term things. I love the fact we can create these little fire breaks, delete apps. Automations is something you talk about. Is that all right? Can you share a little bit more about that? Because that really struck me when we met before.
Yeah.
It sounds so simple, but most of us don't think of it.
Absolutely. Like saying myself, my whole financial system is automated because when I have relied upon my own brain to remember, largely remember, like when I think about my Amex credit card and things like that, you know, why did I not set up from the beginning a direct debit for a proportion of the bill? That reminds me to go into a payment, whereas before I'd forget, and that's not a good thing. Automation is just when you're in that moment of deciding and doing your finances, creating a plan for this is how much I want to save, what I want to invest, you know, whatever the thing is, creating the automation so that ideally, one day after payday, money's, we use the term pay yourself first, but that money is to pay yourself. Yeah, it's a really nice reframe.
I like that,
So when you get the money from your employer, for example, you go straight into the investment account, go straight into the savings account, and it's a sip. And also, for some people, I've just finished working with a couple, actually, and we set up for their pay to come in, and the money to go to the relevant account, so the direct debit account for their bills, all the important things.
Yeah.
And then even paying weekly into another account, which is like shopping and groceries and things like that, just controlling it. So they just need to focus on this one thing and they're never going to not
pay it. It's compartmentalized. But does that also, because a lovely thing I like, you said it this podcast and when we met before, is that there's still the fun element to life, right? And people want to live. So they want to be able to have a drink, have a shop.
Yeah.
Go and do something more impulsive and fun. But the way you approach money, then it still allows for that to go, and this is the more frivolous pot or whatever you want to call that, because you've offset the other stuff. It's not just about restricting and having a life where you can't do anything. And that's what I really like. It's realistic.
Yeah, and I think when I've done this with people, initially there's a bit of a mind block because it's like, oh, but I don't buy clothes every month, or I don't know when I'm going to go out to eat. And actually, there's a really simple solution. You have a pot or a bank account or a pot on, was it Monzo or so, where every month you put a small proportion in there. So when you're ready to spend, you just spend from that bit because you've been building
up. That's a good idea. Yeah.
Simple. Because, I can see initially if you don't have that solution in mind, well, I don't know what I'm going to need to spend or want to spend. And that can be quite stressful because you've got too many decisions to make. And yes. that's one thing I talk about a lot. You want to reduce the cognitive load, yeah. get rid of the need to make all those decisions, automate things, pre-plan so it's done, and you can just enjoy life, you know?
Because that's so interesting. This modern society, so I read something recently that was saying, you know, we are absorbing the equivalent of several hard drives a day compared to even like 10 years ago, which is just staggering, isn't it? Because every phones, everything, blah, blah, blah. It's great. You can run multiple sure. businesses from a phone, but at the same time. So our working memories, I think, I always kind of think of the working memories, the part of the plates that are currently spinning. I've got to do that and tomorrow I've got to pay that and do this, is that you don't want to have too much up here when actually there are automation things that can just make it easy. And the thing that really struck me when we met last time is I was thinking, oh, okay, right, when you're looking at neurodivergent brains in particular, maybe having different bank accounts is going to be too much, but actually it's easier. So having that like Monzo card for the spending habit formation is actually easier than having the one bank account you might want all this control over, but it's just unworkable in terms of, right, that figure has got to be for that, and that's going out. So if I'm in the pub now and spend it, that's the stuff that I also think stops present moment awareness and enjoyment. You don't want to be at the bar. Let's use that as an example. And you want to just buy you and your friend a drink and have a nice time, but you're also sat at the table going, but hang on, I've just bought that. Is that going to bounce? Is that going to... That's the stuff that's not living.
You don't want to think about that. No.
Yeah.
No. And you're right. And you're right, though. For some, the idea of having more than one bank account is not desired. Absolutely. Fine. And that's where things like Monzo's Pots or something like that.
Yes. Yes.
But for many, just the money going over there, and you don't have to think about it.
At all
for months. So
I love that. Yeah, just reducing, because I love that idea that, you know, when you first get paid, if there is stuff, it's so simple, but that's quite life-changing, isn't it, for many people, is if something goes out straight away, you don't really miss it in a way.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly.
It's yes,
and that's why
yeah.
they do it straight away, like the next day after payday. Yes. Get that stuff out of your account, done.
Yeah, and then it's, I guess that's where the kind of, I'm guessing, the habit formation comes in. You're not, when you first set something, like, you might go, oh, some money's gone and my payslip says this and now I've got that. It's very soon, that wonderful neuroplasticity we have, we'll go, okay, well, that's how it works now. So I'll almost got to think of me getting paid this much.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
It's moving over those kind of rote learned things. I get paid this much, so I must have this much to spend. No, it's not.
No.
That's not so helpful.
And that, you know, I say that without, I think it's important to mention that you get there initially, you know, doing a quick calculation to make sure, to see what those numbers are, well, how much are my total bills, and how much am I going to have left? And you do that kind of once until things change. You know, say your bills change, you move house, you get a new job, and you revise it. But before then, you set up the plan for, and it makes me think, actually, I've had lots of comments around the tools that I provide. So I've got a few tools on my website, and I've got a bunch that I give to my clients. But I work with people to build a financial plan for at least 12 months.
Wow.
I think, and all the feedback I've ever had is, this is great, largely because a budget usually is one period, 1 month. And everyone's like, my life is not the same every month.
Yeah.
So what's more realistic is to plan out. And obviously there's room for tweaking and stuff, but it's more, you know, there's maybe, you know, maybe you're one of those people and you're highly frustrated that all your friends' birthdays are in October.
Yes. Mine are all March, there, literally, and Mother's Day.
Wow. So, but then you can plan for that, you know, and set up everything on the financial side that you're not going to feel the pain at that time.
And I think it allows for that. You know, we have said about there's impulsivity in terms of it maybe being more problematic, but also living in the moment, right? Someone says, hey, next weekend, should we go do this? Stay overnight here, or we're going to go and have a nice afternoon tea somewhere. That rather than going, no, every month I can maybe go out and have two glasses of wine or one dinner, and it's very stale and rote learned stuff.
Yes.
Rather than, do you know what? Yes, because I've got to put, I'm going to, offset that and I can go do that. I think it's more value-based living, I hope that's what my take away from this today is, that this all, although it might be tricky to have conversations about money and start the process, but why are we doing this? For me, it's about value-based living, right? We don't want to be up here worrying about money when we can be living our lives and present.
Me as a finance professional, I don't want to be in my head thinking about money either.
Yeah.
What am I doing? What, you know, when I do coaching with people, what's very different is we don't talk about money and cash and numbers for the first couple of sessions,
which is kind of mind-blowing, isn't it? Because that's what you know that good old cognitive bias is, oh, we're going to talk about money and all, but it isn't, and it doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be. It's what's important to you, what would you like to have around you, what kind of life do you know, that's the focus, and then we build that into what we're creating here, because it's not just need to invest for when I retire. It's what's your now like, You know,
that's the thing as well. And I'm wondering, is that a kind of cultural thing? There's a lot of, you know, pension, retirement, save. And yes, absolutely. But also I wonder whether we're getting a bit better and going, actually, I'm also living now, and how we kind of get that together.
I don't know if we're getting better, but I know there's definitely been trends I've seen flying around, you know, with the soft life and all that stuff. But maybe it's trickling through. But yeah, we should definitely be thinking, yes, prepare for the future and put that, you know, have that set up, but now you know, why are we waiting until whatever age to do what we enjoy? We can live life now.
That struck me. So when we first met on that podcast, is it right to say we were kind of like, right, let's go and have lunch, right?
Yeah.
So what we're doing in our systems, it allowed us for that unplanned thing. We hadn't met before and we're like, let's go and have lunch in quite a nice little place around the corner from where we did that podcast. And it was just, that's what struck me of like, that's value-based living. I'd like to do this. I'd like to choose this food. It was really lovely, wasn't it? And
it was.
We were able, that was living in the now, you know, and whatever we're doing in our systems allowed for that.
Do you know what? And I think that this in itself for many is new. Yeah. I think there are a lot of people who have maybe been dealt a card for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, family circumstances, whether it's whatever challenges, or whether it's struggling with ADHD related difficulties and not having explored things like this. And you just accepted that this is my norm. My norm is every month it's a struggle financially. You know, maybe I'm thinking of the creative who.
Yes.
Creative we have in mind, but a lot of us are accepting things that we don't have to. Actually, we can have a really fulfilling day-to-day. We don't have to be millionaires. There might just be a few tweaks we can make that are not overly painful, and make it work, you know.
That's the big thing. So I was going to say, actually, so if you had a little takeaway that you could give us out of all of these nuggets, what would that be? I like to offer what I call my signature move. What's that little adversity takeaway that person on the train or in bed that's listening to this can take away from this podcast today? Some people have more than one. That's allowed.
Okay. Oh, one. I mean, there's one phrase I used at a speaking event I did the other day that I saw quite a lot of people share. But I guess it fits in here, but I don't think it would be the most profound for this conversation, which is, if you don't like the behavior, change the conditions.
Ooh, yes.
Which is quite sharp, but I think it's maybe a bit of a reminder for people to, my intent is for it to be, you have control, you can regain control, actually.
Yes.
If you don't like something, you're allowed
to. That's really helpful. Because sometimes when we notice things are out of control, or the fear and things can come with it, and it can lead to a bit of paralysis sometimes, or decision paralysis. But that's really resonated with me as well. You can get control back.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, I think when I said it, and I it's the same here, but it's don't like the behavior, no shame, change of conditions, because it's not necessarily, it's not that you are silly or incompetent, any of those things. It's just the conditions surrounding what the reality is not conducive to what you really want. So let's think about what's happening here, what's making this be real, and let's work on that.
I love that. And then the impact of that on living, well-being, stress, that's what I love. It's a really holistic approach. So people are going to want to find you. Where do you hang out? Where can people find you online, socials?
Thank you. Mainly on LinkedIn, actually. I go through phases of being there every day, and then my second home, I guess, would be Instagram. I do have my own website, just crystalmcgilvery.com. Nice and easy. I say easy with all the letters, but just my full name.
The links in the show notes for people to literally just click on them as well, to kind of find them, because you do, also says, well, you do a lot of work with obviously individuals around money, but you work with organizations, you do talks, and that's the thing that I would love to get out there as well for you, is that people need you. I think people need that first, come and hear, these are the issues, this is what people aren't addressing. So this isn't just a podcast, you know, about individuals who may want, you know, support with their money. It's about reaching, because you've talked before, you know, especially financial institutions, we want to try and shift the narrative. And you going into organizations is exactly how you are starting to make that change, aren't you?
So, absolutely.
Fine, Crystal, book her in.
I love chatting on this stuff, and you know, as people say, I'm not your typical accountant. I'm a bit bouncy for a typical accountant.
That's why it works. That's why I think this episode is such a good episode, because it's so organic. We didn't have a list of questions to work through. We had some points we wanted to cover for people. Yeah. That's why it works, because it's an organic conversation about money, shame, with some personal experience. You know, that's what people want to hear. You know, we're all humans, psychologists, accountants included, right?
Yeah.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come on. It's so nice to see you again, even though it's virtual this time.
Yes.
Check out Crystal, go and find out her work. Check out our episode on Pension B. What do they call it? The ADHD tax, I think our episode's called. I don't mind plugging that one, because it was a good one, really good episode. Pension B do some amazing stuff, don't they? Thank you so much. I hope the rest of your Friday is lovely and smooth.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun, as I knew it would be.
Absolutely.
Thank you for listening to the Adversity Psychologist podcast. I'm Dr. Tara Quintarillo, and it's been lovely having you along to listen to this episode. If you want to find more about me, you can find me at drtara.co.uk. So you'll see everything I'm up to, my media work, my collaborations, my clinical work, if you're interested in that. And of course, all the other episodes of the Adversity Psychologist podcast. If you're interested in coming on, you can also contact me and let me know what you would like to come and talk about. I'd love to hear from you.